Welcome to Reinventing Professionals, a podcast hosted by industry analyst Ari Kaplan, which shares ideas, guidance, and perspectives from market leaders shaping the next generation of legal and professional services.
This is Ari Kaplan, and I'm speaking today with Aaron Cruz, the Chief Product and Innovation Officer and Head of Enterprise at UnitedLex, a provider of alternative legal services. Hi, Aaron. How are you?
I'm great, Ari. Thanks for having me.
It's my privilege. I'm looking forward to this conversation. So tell us about your background and your role at UnitedLex.
My background is litigator first, kind of data scientist by accident, and really have been for most of my career focused on the intersection of data and the law, how sort of data informs the practice of law day to day. I was initially a baby associate out of a law firm in California called Ropers Majeski, and then got recruited by Littler Mendelsohn as a trade secrets lawyer. Did that for a few years, and then worked my way into my mentor's group at Littler, Paul Wiener, one of the godfathers of e-discovery, and helped Paul build and run that group for a while, very much under his direction and tutelage. And I say all the time, I'm his fault. He built me to the extent that there are issues there. Paul's responsible for those. And then went from Littler, was equity shareholder at Littler in the e-discovery group, litigating e-discovery issues. And then went in-house at Walmart and helped build and run the e-discovery program there for 3 or 4 years. And then spent a lot of time advising legal startups and stuff. And then got recruited over to Littler a second time to be the chief data analytics officer, build the data analytics and AI practice over there. And then got pulled out to come here to UnitedLex. So I've been here for working on 4 years, plus minus. Now seen it at a very senior level from all of the angles, law firm, in-house, and now a data and services company for legal. So it's been a pretty fun ride.
What distinguishes UnitedLex's approach to e-discovery?
I would say that the big difference is, whereas a lot of kind of providers that call themselves e-discovery companies, their real focus is document review more than anything else. And a lot of those revenue models are number of documents times rate equals revenue. We're a data and services company for legal. Document review is a service that we provide. But because we really are a data company for legal, we think about that document review and things like it as a data problem. And so the idea is to leverage technology to look at put human eyes on as few documents as possible, to do that in a very defensible and very, very transparent way, but to really do that quickly and effectively, leveraging as much tech as possible. So like, we built a bunch of things, put our money where our mouth is there. We've invested deeply in data science and the ability to really leverage what I would call like industry leading tools, be those in the Relativity platform or the Reveal platform or whatever else is out there that we think is functional. But then we also build things that make it so that our clients don't have to look at documents over and over again. We have a data reuse platform called the Vantage Intelligence Repository. If clients send us data and we put it into the intelligence repository, we're keeping metadata around how the documents were tagged and how they were used. And we're keeping a synthetic hash value of the document itself, but not the document itself. We're not creating a document repository, which has always been the hurdle to data reuse. But what that means is, if a client sends us a million documents in a matter, I can bounce them off VIR and I can tell you, I've seen 200,000 of these before. Here are the cases you used them in. Here's what you did with them. Here's how they're tagged. And then clients can do things like they can make no-look productions. They can leverage those to build models to go through and identify issue-related documents quicker, relevance documents quicker, that kind of stuff. And we are also retaining privilege tags, and to the extent that clients want to, the description of privileged documents that have been tagged and retained as privileged. So we're not redoing that work every single time. It really is, instead of being a volume game, it's a data game. And so that approach permeates everything we're doing around e-discovery and what I call modern litigation support. And it really is a fundamentally different model in that sense.
As a former chief data analytics officer at a top law firm and general counsel at a well-regarded AI technology company, how would you characterize the evolution of AI in legal?
Slow. It's interesting because AI in the form of like technology-assisted review, continuous active learning, various analytics engines. Those have been a part of e-discovery and what I would call the litigation and investigative lifecycle for a very long time now. They are accepted technologies, but it took a really long time for those to get there. It's really in the last 4 or 5 years that you see people going that route, because you're not having the big courtroom fights very often anymore about what a TAR protocol is going to look like. And you don't have people who've never seen a document yelling that isn't going to work. And you have to go have a trial before you even get to discovery kind of stuff. Like, for the most part, we've worked out the kinks on that. And so I think it's more accepted. I think when you ask that question, in a lot of ways now, what you're really, I think, getting at is that the generative AI tech and some of that stuff. And I would say that that really is, it's new to the table. I think in the long term, it's going to have a profound impact on the profession of law and the way work product is built. I do think we're in a hype cycle, and hype cycles are interesting, right? Because it's that we overestimate it in the short run and we underestimate it in the long run. And I think that for the law in particular, it's going to be profound. I think what you're going to see is increasingly that technology forces lawyers to be editors rather than authors, which is not how the law is built. The law is built where lawyers really write to make and refine arguments and improve them over time. I think you're going to, in very short order, start seeing, because you see it, the tech is there today in certain spaces, in certain jurisdictions, in certain practices to autonomously draft briefs and motions and discovery requests and stuff like that. That's going to get better and deeper. And lawyers are going to do less writing, more editing. I think that's going to be really interesting for young lawyers. I was at an event in Chicago last week, and one of the things that we were talking about was lawyers for the last several hundred years have been trained through writing. What happens when, I'm very familiar with a current college freshman, and the way she writes papers right now is she leverages 3 or 4 different LLMs. The first one does like a draft. The second one essentially obscures the fact that AI wrote the first draft. And the third one checks it for potential plagiarism and drops in nuances and things that makes it look very human written, right? She's a freshman in college. So fast forward, call that 7 years, right? 8 years from now, you're going to have lawyers potentially entering the practice of law who spent their entire upper level academic career never really writing anything. We lack the academy, right? The sort of foundational infrastructure for creating lawyers. We're going to have a gap there that's really interesting. And I think that's going to be like a profound place where legal and this technology is going to intersect really hard pretty quickly.
Where are law firms and legal departments succeeding with innovation, and where do they still face challenges?
I think your most successful law firms and corporate departments are succeeding in a couple of ways. I think one, law firms and legal departments that really remember that innovation is a human-centered enterprise. It's actually not a technology-centered enterprise. It's a human-centered enterprise. How do people work? What are they doing? What's valuable? Where is their friction in their day-to-day? What are the things that drag people down from doing the sophisticated, strategically important work to the stuff that is necessary, but is neither sophisticated nor strategically important? When I was in house, we had a running joke that everybody in the place played 2 levels down from their title. And the running joke was like, what if we could just up-level everybody so that they were only playing 1 level below their title? What more could we do? And at law firms and legal departments that kind of look at it that way are the ones that are successful, thinking about how they take friction out of people's day-to-day, how they innovate around the ugly parts of the practice of law, freeing people up to get out of that and into the stuff that is strategic and high level and impactful. I think that's where you get real value. And from my vantage, innovation that is directed at very practical problems, right? That if you look at how work in a particular practice gets done and how you can either take friction out of that practice or how you can add value that either allows that practice to reach up, right? This technology is going to allow small law firms to reach up into work that right now they can't do. And it's going to allow large, sophisticated law firms to reach down into work that right now is probably not economically practical for them. And I think firms and legal departments that really think of it that way, I think those folks are seeing a lot of success.
What are the most common challenges your clients are facing?
They're constantly being asked to do more with less. I was on a very long call with a client this morning, and I think that phrase was used 8 times. Departments, for the most part, are a cost center, and increasingly organizations are looking at cost centers and they're squeezing on them, right? They're watching what's going on in the macro economy. And I think while you can call balls and strikes on it as you want to, I think a lot of people are gearing up for a turn that might not be positive. And so they're retrenching. And that retrenching usually means you have cost out actions out of cost centers. A lot of clients are struggling to do more with less and rethink how certain aspects of legal get done. The stuff that is run the business work, it's not strategically important. The difference between winning and losing is negligible for the organization, if there is one at all. It's really about how much does this cost? How many resources is it going to divert? How much attention is it going to take away from the core business or the strategically important things we're chasing? I think increasingly clients are struggling to understand how they can do that work differently in ways that are more effective. I also think clients are struggling with getting arms around the whole generative AI loop, looking for very practical applications because the business is looking for applications for it. And they're asking the legal department to work increasingly like other aspects of the business, adhere to a P&L, adopt technology. I think that push, we're seeing a lot there. And I spend a fair amount of time helping legal departments build their AI strategy. What are they going to attack? How do they attack it? What's the low-hanging fruit? What's the mid-grade stuff? And then what's the, hey, when we get everything done, this is a wish. So I think they're struggling there. And candidly, clients often are struggling with visibility into themselves. Legal ops is this hugely important lever that organizations can pull. But those legal ops groups are often under-resourced. They rarely have extra data scientists to go around, and data and analysis is the lifeblood of the impact legal ops can have. And so I think they're looking for folks a lot of times to help with that.
Where do you see law firms and legal departments investing in litigation and in e-discovery services?
Law firms are increasingly looking at different ways of having their own little kind of captive ALSP, little e-discovery kind of groups. They want the capability so they can service clients in a modern world. And they don't necessarily want to throw all of the revenue that's associated with that over the transom to a third-party provider. But the funny thing about firms is those investment decisions are trade-offs. They're usually partnerships or some version of a partnership, privately held corporation, something like that. And investing those dollars takes dollars out of potentially partner pockets at the end of the year. And so that push-pull, I think, is hard. And so I think there are a lot of law firms that right now are looking at different ways of building that internal capability. Maybe they outsource the technology and the infrastructure and some of the people, and they keep the lawyers and that kind of stuff. Folks that are outsourcing the review component and keeping the processing and hosting, I'm seeing that investment get made. And I'm seeing clients invest in a couple of places. I'm seeing them invest in what I would call outside counsel management, thinking about how they leverage firms and get work done in different ways. I'm seeing them invest to some extent in internal like e-discovery and AI groups, right? So thinking about how technology applies, who do they partner with, what do they insource, seeing those investments get made. And I'm seeing investments in what I would call key strategic people. Legal CLOs are a place that I see clients investing in-house. Innovation officers, you've seen a lot of law firms starting to do that. One of the things that I think is very interesting, I can't remember where I read it, but it was a study the other day that said, if you looked at e-discovery, the way the cycle went was your service providers were the cutting edge. And then a lot of that talent got brought into law firms and law firms built that out internally. And then a lot of that talent went in-house. And that was the cycle. And now I think with the application of AI and analytics and this next generation of e-discovery and this next generation of work product enabling tools, you're seeing that same kind of cycle happen. You saw the service providers really getting arms around it and really figuring it out and starting to build things that applied it in real time. You're starting to see law firms move in that direction as well. And I think in a couple of years, you'll really start to see a pull in-house to really cover off some of those pieces so that outside spend gets mitigated downstream.
You've served in various leadership positions throughout your career. How is leadership evolving?
It's more diffuse. When I was coming up through the ranks of law firms, I traveled a lot, but I had an office and I was in the office a lot, or an office a lot. When I was at Walmart, we had the home office and I was in the office. I think with the pandemic and the spread of virtual, which I do think while you're seeing some pivot back, I don't think we're going back to where we were. I don't think we're going to stay where we've been. I think there's some middle ground that's probably likely to take shape and be the reigning kind of platform for a while. And it's more difficult to mentor people and motivate people when you can't walk the halls and say, hey, and take people to lunch and go get drinks after work and all the people part, right? EQ is harder. And I think EQ is one of the most important things a leader tries to bring to the table. Motivating and mentoring, helping shape direction, helping to influence people and helping to inspire them. And I think all of that is more difficult in a virtual world. And so I think that's a space where, as a leader, I've tried to spend a lot of time building those skills. I'm still not anywhere close to where I'd like to be. That one's really important. I think our CEO, James is really good at that. He is very good at bringing people together, creating a unifying message and sending the troops out across the organization to work the plan. That is a big evolution in how leadership works. It's much less directive and much more what I would call trust but verify. And the verify part is more difficult in a virtualized environment. I think leaders have always had to stay at least conversant in what the applicable technologies are in their space. And I think the pace of that has picked up. I've been reading Stanford yesterday, or maybe over the weekend, maybe Friday, released their 500-page AI report. And my downtime over the last couple of days has been spent slamming my way through that. And while I was going through that today, I got a tickler about somebody else that has a 350-page AI applications in business level report. Like, I need to get through both of those. It's 825 pages total. It's a lot to read. And so I think really getting the time and the space to sit down and keep a pace and think is also difficult in a world where things just speed up all the time.
This is Ari Kaplan speaking with Aaron Cruz, the Chief Product and Innovation Officer and Head of Enterprise at United Lex, a provider of alternative legal services. Aaron, it's been a privilege. Thank you so much.
Ari, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Reinventing Professionals podcast. Visit reinventingprofessionals.com or arikaplanadvisors.com to learn more.